If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Freeman Report. It is Monday, the 22nd of April, 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman. And welcome to the start of a brand new week right here on today's News Talk. I've got lots to discuss this week, but before I kick things off today, I'd just like to say a big thank you to those of you who helped share and repost last week's interview with Dr. William Makis on turbo cancers and the link with the mRNA jabs. As of this morning, it has got more than 100,000 views on X alone, and it is still being shared, which means it'll probably hit around 2, maybe even 250,000 thousand views across all platforms, which is pretty good because it's a 17-minute interview. So for something that long to be shared that much is really good. If you haven't seen or haven't watched the interview, please do after today's show and share it if you can. This is a really important topic that we need to get in front of the public. I've had two world-leading oncologists now on the show talking about the links with mRNA jabs and cancer in young people. And there is now also 26 scientific papers in the literature. You can find the interview pinned to the top of my account on X, or you can go to tntradio.live and click on the episodes button where you can watch or listen back to all of my previous interviews, including the one I did previously with Professor Angus Dogleish on the same topic. In a moment, we're going to go over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news. But after that, I'll be discussing censorship gone mad in Australia. I'll be asking if the eSafety Office is really focused on protecting the public or whether staff at the office are engaged in intimidation of members of the public who are genuinely concerned about censorship overreach. I'll also be discussing over-prescription of psychotropic drugs to children around the world and asking if this is a result of the education system only catering for a narrow section of learning styles. So to discuss the eSafety Office in Australia, I'll be joined by Australian freelance filmmaker Nathan Livingstone, aka Milk Bar TV on the X platform. Nathan recently wrote a letter to Australia's eSafety office after it appeared that staff at the office started searching for information on his family. It was actually on his wife, because he had been critical of the office on social media. What appears to have happened is that Nathan published an interview that he did with Billboard Chris about the eSafety office banning a post by Chris on the X platform. If you remember, Billboard Chris was on this show talking about this a couple of weeks ago, because Elon Musk is now taking up the case and he's going to take legal action against the eSafety Commissioner in Australia. Now, after Nathan posted the interview, which highlighted potential overreach by the eSafety Commissioner, staff at the office started searching his wife's profile on LinkedIn. Of course, one of the features on LinkedIn is it does tell you who's been looking at your profile. Nathan has concluded that the only reason staff at the eSafety office would be searching his wife's details is related to his criticism of the office on social media, which to me seems like a sensible conclusion to make, because it would be one hell of a coincidence otherwise. So I guess the question is, why are staff at the eSafety office searching for information about his family? Is it to intimidate him or to see if they can find any information to undermine his criticism? I agree with Nathan that it must be for one of these two reasons. It's difficult to see why else they'd be searching for information on his wife. Now, the thing is, in a democracy, government should be accountable to the people it serves. Nathan has every right to raise questions about potential overreach by the eSafety Commissioner. In a functioning democracy, what staff at the eSafety office should be doing is addressing Nathan's concerns, not digging for information about his family. And I have to say, if you're watching this from Australia, this should worry you, as what this indicates is a government office that sees the general public as an enemy rather than as the people it is set up to serve. They are public servants after all, and so should act as so. But instead, we see signs that government staff are acting more like the mob, looking for evidence to silence Nathan or try and intimidate him by snooping for information on his family. Okay, so then moving on, in the second part of this hour, I will be talking with retired US educator Lynn Taylor about the overdiagnosis of special needs in schools and the resulting overprescription of psychotropic drugs to control the behavior of those children. After reading an article by Lynn, I get the impression that she thinks it is the education system that is partly to blame for this, because the reality is that children learn in different ways, and expecting all children to behave in the same way, like the education system generally does in the West, is a defective way of trying to organize education for children. Now, combine that with Big Pharma and its drive to produce new drugs to solve every problem known to man, and you end up where we are today, with young kids who are being prescribed powerful drugs in ever-increasing numbers. Now, personally, I don't understand how any parent could allow their child to be put on these drugs. But I guess when you normalise these things with aggressive marketing and disinformation from pharmaceutical companies that just want to make a profit, I guess there will be parents who are susceptible to those messages. So to understand this issue in more depth, I'm delighted that Lynn will be joining me in the second part of this hour of the show. To get in touch, as always, you can reach me on jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you're enjoying the show and appreciate what TNT is doing, then get yourself over to your favorite social media platform and give me, James Freeman, and TNT Radio a follow and a shout out. You'll be able to help us spread the word of all the good things that TNT is doing at the moment. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk, TNT.
Connecting the dots, painting the bigger picture.
They always have great conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right then, over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper. What breaking news have you got for us today, Gemma?
Well, it's been a fairly busy day so far here in the UK. Rishi Sunak held a press conference at number 10 Downing Street just a few hours ago, ostensibly to talk about the Rwanda bill, which he hopes to get through the Commons tonight. He said it'll stay as long as it takes for the House of Commons and House of Lords to thrash it out. And he pledged that the first flights will take off within the next 10 to 12 weeks. I think with the Rwanda bill now, it's a question of, is anybody actually listening? He may call all the press conferences he wants to try and look good, but I think the public may have been waning interest in this story. Also, the Met Police Chief, Mark Rowley, has met with the Home Secretary and Policing Minister this morning. This is over calls that the Metropolitan Police are anti-Semitic following video that has been doing the rounds and gone viral over a Jewish anti-Semitic campaigner being cautioned walking through a pro-Palestinian protest for being openly Jewish. He's called for Mark Rowley to stand down. We'll see where that story goes. And a very interesting story about Russia being blamed for a spate of cyber attacks and targeting thousands of British holidaymakers using a GPS jamming technology to make planes think that there are false objects in the sky and swerving around them. The European Aviation Safety Agency warned of this, though, the sharp rise of these jamming and spoofing activities back in January, but they wouldn't say who they thought was responsible. Industry experts are now saying today it's Russia, apparently, James, and we should all be careful of that when we go on holiday.
So what, I'm a little bit unclear there. I haven't read that story in full. So what's the problem then? These planes, what is it saying that this is a safety risk that planes could crash, or is it delaying planes? What exactly is happening?
It's all of the above, and it's been going on for a while. And it's only today that industry experts have said, well, we think it's Russia. This basically extremely dangerous electronic attacks involving a jamming of GPS, 46,000 flights logged satellite navigation issues between August last year and March this year. The jamming hotspots were in the Baltic, the Black Sea, and the Eastern Med. And the European Aviation Safety Agency said back in January, there is an increase in these jamming attacks, jamming of GPS technology, spoofing, making planes think, oh, there's something ahead, let's swerve around. But they didn't say who was behind them, but industry experts are now saying they think it's Putin and saying that they have received information from Russia. Now, is this the constant demonization of Russia that we keep seeing in the Western media? The war narrative of Ukraine versus Russia seems to be crumbling. So now the Great British Holiday is possibly under attack. If you get on a plane in good faith to go to the Eastern Mediterranean, could you be subject to one of these jamming attacks? There was a government aide, who reportedly blamed Russia for an attack that jammed an RAF plane as it was going through Poland, and the Defence Secretary Grant Shapps was on board. Now, that's now being blamed on Russia. There's been no actual incidents of crashes or accidents, but the numbers are up. I can just quote some of the more recognizable airlines. There were 2,300 Ryanair flights, just over 2,300. Wizz is another airline company that was affected. British Airways, 4 EasyJet flights, so they were subject to this jamming technology. And also 7 planes operated by TUI, which is a well-known holiday operator here in the UK. Mm. But that doesn't fly in the Baltic, but it flies around other parts. Also logged sat-nav issues. The airline at the time said its affected planes were probably looking at flights without passengers on them. Virgin Atlantic, interestingly, is the only plane company or only major UK plane company not affected by these electronic attacks. There's no doubt the attacks are happening, or the jamming on sat-nav with planes is happening. This is today, though, the first instance that people are saying it's Russia. It's all to do with Russia.
Yeah, but
that's what we're being told. That's what we're being told. Whether that's the truth is another matter.
Yeah, and I'm gonna back up a bit here, because there's been 46,000 of these, right? So I've not heard of this before. I'm assuming that it is not really a safety issue. Otherwise, surely there would have been something would have happened, right? They wouldn't have just allowed 46,000 of these incidents to go ahead. I've got a few questions on this. They're not very successful if it's Russia trying to cause problems for British tourists, is it? So that doesn't really make sense to me, because if there's been 46,000 of these incidents, then what's been achieved? Why is the Russian, because they're saying it's the Russian government, why would the Russian government do something like this? Just to nitpick and cause problem, you know, if it's not actually causing a fundamental problem, it doesn't really make sense to me. There's something a bit of a miss, I think, with this story. And of course, you know, it's very, very convenient in terms of there's another thing that we can blame on the Russians. Now, if all of these different airlines are logging these problems, then it's clear that there is a problem with GPS, but I wonder if it's something else, something to do with the war there, and this is a spill-off for that rather than it being directed at tourists. But I guess it's another convenient sort of, like you said, you know, opportunity to demonize Russia. I do want to quickly comment on also on this this Met Police thing with this Jewish man. I've seen comments on social media over the weekend that this is, it looks, it has all the hallmarks of just being a plant. It's a little bit of a psyop, a bit of propaganda, because I've listened to the interview with the policeman. And again, it's a little bit like that, those guys that wanted to run into the, the protests for Gaza or just, you know, against Israel. They wanted to run in there with these signs, Hamas is terrorist. Because as far as I can see, what the police are saying is, look, you were trying to walk against the moving traffic of the protest. You're clearly made it obvious that you're a Jewish person. So you're you know, the thing the policeman was worried about is that this person was trying to aggravate and trigger people in the crowd to create a problem. You could go further and say maybe actually he was trying to get the police attention in doing that, so that this could all be filmed to show, to give evidence that Jews are not safe in London. That's my interpretation of it anyway, because the policeman, all I can see is he seems concerned for the safety of this man and also for their primary role in that situation, which is keeping the peace. You know, that's what the police are there to do. I didn't get the impression that it was anything against Jewish people and saying you can't be overtly Jewish. It's just like the person with the sign. I don't think the police were saying that sign is wrong and you cannot say that. What they were saying is, if you go over there and with that sign in the middle of the protest, it's going to cause a public disorder. It's going to cause a problem. And the police are there to stop that. So that's my interpretation of what happened. And I think this is just being used, whether purposely or not, is being used again, just as a Israel are victims, you know. Israelis and Jews in the UK are the victim. It's trying to change the narrative, which I think is utterly ridiculous. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Gemma?
You certainly echo a couple of other TNT hosts over the last few hours that have issued similar sentiments, and that if you watch the 13-minute video in its entirety, it kind of paints a very different picture than the one that is being presented in the mainstream. And Gideon Falter, the anti-Semitic campaigner, who was the Jewish man in question here, is a very high-profile campaigner, and he's been doing the rounds today. Yeah, he's been doing the rounds today on mainstream media saying, you know, absolutely, right. the Met police are awful, isn't it awful? But there is another side to this, which is coming out slowly, yeah. Trickling out slowly.
Okay, well, if he's a campaigner and an activist, it's like these people that go to the conferences and then, you know, I'm just a member of the public. And then, you know, when you actually look into them, if that's the case, then I think that the fingerprints are all over this event, which suggests exactly what I said, that this has been set up purposely just to paint Israel again as the victims, Jewish people, and say that these protests, basically laying the groundwork to say that the government should stop these protests, which I think is a load of baloney, because you either have free speech and you allow people to protest or you don't. You can't pick and choose. Otherwise, we get into all sorts of problems for every side of the argument. It doesn't matter what you want to protest about. The government should just butt out, right? You either believe that or you don't. Right, Gemma, we're going to move on. But I'm sure we'll have more stories to talk about in the second hour of the show. To the rest of you, got a great conversation coming up. I did tag, and if you're watching, I did intentionally tag the eSafety office on X this morning when I advertised this show, because if they're digging around in someone's LinkedIn, I'm sure they're watching this show. So if you are, stay tuned, because we're going to be talking all about you in a moment and overreach in Australia right here on TNT.
TNT's Lembit Open.
Money is a problem for you. Does that make you into a communist?
Not at all. It's just the way that money is brought into circulation. You know, most people don't understand that concept. We live in a debt-based fiat economy. And the way that money is brought into circulation is basically out of thin air. You know, you go to the bank, you ask for a loan, a mortgage or something. The bank doesn't hold those funds within their vaults, whatever you want to call it, and then they literally press a button and that money gets brought into circulation through thin air through the Bank of England. They're given to that person, and then that person has to pay that money back with interest on top. So that whole concept of the way money is brought into circulation, it is a form of control.
Limit. Open. And today's news talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff, It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, now I'm going to enjoy this next interview. TNT was set up to be a free speech platform, given all the censorship and the nonsense we see in the legacy media. And this story is one of those stories that gets to the heart of what's going on. So I'm delighted to be welcoming Nathan Livingston, who's a freelance filmmaker. He lives in Australia. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Nathan.
Thanks for having me, James.
Right, and Nathan, you've obviously interviewed Billboard Chris recently, haven't you? I had him on the show a couple of weeks ago to talk about exactly the same thing. Let's start there, because that's where all of this originates, doesn't it? So tell us, let's remind everybody why you interviewed Billboard Chris. What's going on there?
Yeah, so Billboard Chris did a viral tweet where pretty much there was a story that ran where a woman who identifies as a man, an Australian, they were put on a World Health Organization board to pretty much advise on health policies. Now, this person had a lot of disturbing content online. They also had a double mastectomy, but they also posted images of bestiality, bondage. They wrote articles promoting drugs during sex. And Billboard Chris just rightly said, is this the kind of person that should really be consulting and having an input on health policy? And because of this this tweet that went viral, our e-safety commissioner, our kind of censorship czar, our kind of minister of truth, pretty much took that down in Australia. And so I interviewed him, and we pretty much just discussed that, and we spoke about the Streisand effect of how from her taking that down, it only put more of a spotlight and only went more viral after that.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think what Chris said, wasn't it? He said people with mental health problems shouldn't be giving advice to other people with mental health problems. And of course, you know, this person has been appointed to do exactly that. So I think Chris's point was, he did have a valid point, but I think as part of his post, I think he might have misgendered this person. But anyway, I think that was beside the by, because what he was saying is people who are posting stuff on bestiality and these other things shouldn't be put in a position giving health advice to other vulnerable people. So you did that interview, Nathan, with Billboard Chris, you published it. So then tell us what happened next.
So there was also the court case in Australia with Giggle versus Tickle as well, which was another kind of trans-related court case. So I did some posts regarding that, and again, talking about the e-safety commissioner regarding that. So that was also in the news cycle. But basically it was last 2 days ago, Friday, when my wife pretty much notified me and said, hey, look, I've got a notification on my LinkedIn, and someone from the eSafety Commission has been snooping on my LinkedIn profile. Now, this is really strange, because my wife's a stay-at-home mum, so she's not currently working, and she hasn't worked for over a year. And even when she was working, she has no equivalent kind of roles, or there'd be any reason why they would be kind of recruiting her or looking for her to work in the eSafety Commission. But also her name, we don't share the same name on her profile, and she's not easy to find.
Oh, really?
So the only rationale is that somehow they already had her profile, and they were stalking her because of her connection to me.
Now, Nathan, do you have, in the UK here, we've got something called a subject access request, which is a little bit like an FOI, but it's basically about one person. So I've actually put one in for DCMS. It was just over a year ago. And what it does is, if you put one of these requests into a government department, they have to, by law, give you all of the information which they hold on you. And I actually got information back that they were producing reports on me because of stuff I was highlighting about the COVID jabs, harms and stuff like that. So they were definitely snooping and they were producing reports on me. Have they got an equivalent law in Australia?
We have a freedom of information request. So that's been that's been submitted. So I put that in to find out what they've been doing internally to look into me. And I also submitted a complaint to, we've got the ACMA, which is the Australian Communications and Media Authority, which the eSafety Commission is actually connected to that. That's the kind of larger branch when it comes to the regulation, the laws surrounding the online use in Australia. So I submitted that and I then made that public and tweeted that out as a open letter, formal complaint. And that's gone fairly viral. It's got over 150,000 views now. And that's been good. It's been good to see that support of people saying, yeah, this isn't right. You know, they don't have the authority to be able to be monitoring content creators who it seems like the only reason that they would be keeping surveillance on them is because they're being critical of this office itself.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we don't know, I guess, why they were looking at your wife's profile. But I think, it is slightly worrying, particularly given, like you said, because, you know, I guess if you were a member of staff there and you might just out of curiosity, oh, who's this guy? Who does he know? Is his wife in government? But the fact that your wife has a different name, you're not obviously linked. It sounds like somebody's doing a fair bit of digging around more than, I guess, what you would expect of just maybe a bit of curiosity. So there's definitely a big question there, I think, for the eSafety office. And I hope you get an answer from them on what's going on. Now, Nathan, we're going to take a quick short break now, but we'll be back in a second because I'd like to get your view on what you think the implications are if staff are actually, as part of their job, they've been instructed to look into you. Because it's a bit perverse, isn't it? Because government staff are there. They're our servants, they're public servants, or they're supposed to be anyway. So what they really should be doing, in my view, is addressing your concerns and maybe writing to you, explaining why they've done that or whatever it is of justifying what they're doing rather than trying to dig around for information. But we'll have that conversation in just a minute right after this break on TNT. Attention!
Special bulletin, special bulletin.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Australia's Prime Minister has lashed out at ex-owner Elon Musk for refusing to comply with his government's censorship demands. It comes as both sides of Australia's parliament step up their efforts to censor whatever they deem to be inappropriate or fake news on social media. And US lawmakers have been slammed for waving Ukrainian flags on the floor of the House of Representatives after approving another $60 billion for Kyiv's war effort.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Right. So, Nathan, obviously there's big questions about what is going on at the office, in both in terms of its sort of application of its remit, which is to protect the government. Is it overreaching? But also then some of its behavior or questions over its behavior in terms of how it's then reacting to criticisms about that. But let's back up a bit, Nathan. Tell us about the office itself, why it was set up, what its remit is. And I guess, what do Australians think of this eSafety Commissioner in office?
So it was set up in 2017 and it was set up under a Conservative government, funnily enough. It boasts about being the first government organisation that's an online regulatory body. So it speaks like it's this kind of new initiative. And initially it started up to keep children safe from when they're using the internet online. And as always, the powers have just kind of grown and grown over time. And so we've just seen them expand more and more. And we saw that, especially with COVID, which happened all across the world. Just recently, things have ramped up a lot. You know, I mean, we talked about Billboard Chris. So they extended where they say that something like misgendering counts as harassment and it counts as hate speech. So that's then included under their clause because it's seen as harassing other Australian citizens. So people can then make a complaint like they did with Billboard Chris. But just even in the last month, there's been a lot going on in Australia. You know, we had the horrific mass murder in Bondi Junction with six people that were killed. And then we had the stabbing with the Bishop Mario Emanuel. And so because of all these things that have happened, they've kind of grouped all of this into one thing and kind of given more and more power and control for the e-safety because they're saying now there's violent imagery online, but they're also saying that, you know, there's potentially terrorist activity as well online using apps like Telegram. So it's all kind of being balled up into one thing where they're saying there's violent imagery and then there's misinformation and then there's terrorist activity. And so it's all being kind of passed to give this e-safety commissioner more and more powers to be able to really control what social media is allowed to put up there. And even just recently, just a couple of hours ago, they were granted an injunction to take down all of the footage of the stabbing of the bishop on Twitter, not just in Australia, but everywhere online around the world. And they've used that justification because Australians are using VPN blockers. So they're saying to prevent Australians from being able to see it, even using VPN blockers, they're now saying that it needs to be taken down all around the world, which Elon Musk, of course, is a free speech absolutist, is saying, well, no, you don't have the authority to be able to tell us. We can't, yeah. You know, we're not allowed to put that in America or, you know, the UK. So it's it's pretty scary at the moment. Things have really ramped up in the past few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you search for, go on YouTube, this always really gets my goat because if you want to search for violent stuff, right, it's out there. It's not difficult to find. You can go on YouTube and it's all over the place, and you can find it on X. It just seems to be there's certain types of violence, isn't there, that are connected to sensitive political issues that we're not allowed to see. We're allowed to see violence in general. And of course, you know, there's lots of, I guess what you can call pornographic images, which are online. The governments don't seem to be doing much about that. In terms of protecting children. I mean, what do you think the answer is? Because I guess, you know, for those who are maybe not so sort of tuned in to what is going on here behind the scenes in terms of censorship of certain political ideas and whatnot, there'll be a lot of citizens who'll be sat back and saying, well, we do want an e-safety person to protect our children. What do you think the answer is to that? That children are just, we just say to children shouldn't be on X or on YouTube or do we, I don't know, what do you think? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think we have pretty robust laws when it comes to things like, you know, instigating violence. And of course, you know, when it comes to, you know, pedophilia, any kind of imagery like that, when it comes to slander. And I think for those laws that aren't in place, I think the marketplace should determine it. You know, if Elon Musk wants Twitter to become a 4chan and become a kind of wasteland of, you know, despicable imagery and whatnot, I mean, that's, you know, people aren't going to want to go there, you know, at the end of the day, it's not going to turn a profit. So I think that's where the market should be able to determine that. But I don't think the government should be playing the role of the parent. And more we're seeing that. Where the government is taking over the role of the parent, but also they're treating us like kids as well, you know, where we should be able to kind of determine what we're able to see for ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And where would you say public opinion is on this in general in Australia?
I'm always a little reticent after living through COVID to be able to kind of weigh in with Australians and where things are at. Because there was a bit of a shocking few years where I didn't think things would go that way. So it's hard to tell at the moment. But right now, the politicians are really coming out and it seems like it's a bipartisan effort to really paint Elon Musk as some sort of a narcissistic egomaniac who has a disregard for Australian law. So that's currently where things are at in the news. There's all the politicians are kind of coming out and beating their chests and saying we need more and more censorship. The temperature of the public, I'm not sure. I think we'll see in the next couple of months.
Yeah, and is there a wider debate on, because obviously this is all focused on X at the moment. Elon Musk clearly seems to have ruffled a few feathers there with his legal action now against the e-safety commissioner. But is there a wider debate on TikTok, on Facebook and these other platforms and the content that it's on there? Or was it all just focused on X?
I think X because it's by far the most popular in this space. And I think because Elon Musk is such a polarizing figure, that gets most of the publicity. But Telegram's a big one. I think they have a hard time regulating Telegram. So they definitely are very vocal about that. Meta, to some extent, they speak about, but Meta complied recently with taking down the footage. I think it's interesting also to point out that the eSafety Commissioner, Julia McGrant, used to work for Twitter as well before Elon Musk bought the platform. And she's been very vocal about Elon Musk. So it feels like maybe she's got an axe to grind.
Right. So was she one of the ones that was let go? Because, of course, a lot of people were let go when Elon Musk came in. So that'd be interesting to know. Nathan, we have run out of time now, but listen, this isn't going to go away because Elon Musk has got this legal action now. So I'm sure we're going to hear about what happens there. So please do come back on the show. I'd love to hear what happens with your complaint if you get an answer to that. I do think there is a question. So if you're watching from the eSafety office there, I think there's a genuine question that you need to answer there. What is going on with your staff digging around, trying to find information on Nathan's wife? I think you've got a genuine gripe there and you should get an answer. So, Nathan, please do come back on to update us when you hear what's going on.
I will, yeah. Thanks for having me, James.
Thank you. Right then, we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about another really, quite startling issue that we're seeing, particularly in America, but increasingly in other countries around the world. And that is the overprescription of powerful psychotropic drugs to children for conditions such as ADHD and other behavioral issues. I think there is an overdiagnosis of these conditions, which is also then leading to an overprescription of these very powerful drugs. So we're going to be talking all about that and what is going on right here on TNT.
Sometimes a car comes along that changes everything. With innovations never thought possible and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time, and this is that car. This is the world's first VWB. Equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With a touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you will never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires. And we removed the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
You ever heard of a polyp? Sounds like a rare species of toad. Actually, it's a lump that grows inside me, your bowel. Look, I'm pretty sure if you had a strange lump growing on your forehead, you might get it looked at, right? But when they're growing inside me, nothing, nada. And the polyps I get can lead to Australia's second deadliest cancer. So, until there's a way to make them grow on your face, it's up to you to get me looked at. Got it?
This is the Freeman Report with your host, James Freeman, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, next we're going to be talking about a topic. I have talked about this on the show before, the growing number of children that are being diagnosed. I've had scientists and doctors on talking about this, but the growing number of kids that are being diagnosed with all sorts of conditions such as ADHD and other behavioral issues, and they're being put on these powerful psychotropic drugs. Very, very worrying, particularly given the numbers in the US and the growing numbers elsewhere in the world. So to talk about all of this really important topic, delighted to be welcomed by retired private educator Lynn Taylor. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Lynn.
Well, thank you so much, James. And yes, you're absolutely right. This is a growing problem. But I think it's important for folks to understand that the global push is not new. Yes, COVID has been used as a scapegoat to go ahead, oh, well, we have so many more children in need of mental health interventions that because of COVID, because COVID caused this, COVID caused that. Well, if you look at the numbers, this actually dates back to 1975 and started in the United Kingdom. And how I know that is because I was able to find the World Council for Gifted and Talented Education's history. And in it, they absolutely go ahead and tell you, yes, we're doing this because there's a psychometric curve that we have to manipulate.
Right. Okay. Well, let's start with the diagnosis because then we can move on to the kids being prescribed these drugs. Because there has been a striking increase, hasn't there? Or a striking increase of diagnosis of kids with all these conditions like ADHD. Tell us about that and how steep an increase we've seen over the past sort of 10, 20 years.
Oh, my goodness. The increase, I do not have the exact percentage, James, but I will tell you that it has almost tripled from what I can understand. And what we're seeing is the diagnosis of, well, Johnny and Susie have this special need, or, oh, Johnny and Susie have this gift and this talent. And because there's so much anxiety tied to either end of that spectrum, oh, well, we have to intervene, which means they may be getting mental health services they do or don't need. But along with that comes the overprescription of psychotropic drugs that manipulate their moods and their behaviors. And so many of these students who are gifted find that if I'm on the medication, whether I really need it or not, my gifts and my talents are muted, so much to the point that they get off of the medicines, sometimes without doctor's orders, and throws them back into a state where they're like, oh my goodness, but I'd rather not have the medicine so that I can create or do what I need to do.
And what kind of drugs are we talking about here?
Oh, you're talking about anything from like heavy duty mood stabilizers all the way up to lithium. You're talking more times than not for ADHD, they're going to have something called Ritalin. And if you go back and you look at the diagnostic manual that most people are using, every supposed disorder, I mean, stubbornness has been renamed defiance disorder. Well, no, you're stubborn. And there's a reason you're stubborn, but it shouldn't be labeled as a condition so that it can be medicated. And that's just one example of what we're seeing.
And what are the side effects? Because obviously, like all drugs, particularly if they're, you know, powerful, what kind of side effects, unwanted side effects, are we seeing with these drugs in these children?
Well, you can see increases in agitation. Sometimes you can see increases in, well, I don't want to leave the house. You can also see increases in harmful thoughts, not just to themselves, but to other people as well. Things that they may never, ever have thought about. Suddenly, that little bird, if you will, is on their shoulder going, hey, you know, you don't like what's going on here. Oh, guess what? You can go hurt yourself, or you can go do harm to someone else. or you can go and abuse an animal. I mean, things that they would never think of before are coming up. And then we have the schools going, well, because of COVID, we have to overreach into your mental health interventions. And because you're displaying that you can't sit still in your seat, well, therefore, you must have a behavioral learning problem. And as such, we have all these stop gaps that we can help you with.
Yeah. No, I can see that. Now, before we move on to, what, because I know that you've kind of thought about this a lot, and you've kind of the reasons that mm-hmm. you come up with are kind of a lot deeper than the argument normally goes on the debate on this. But before that, mm-hmm. let's talk about the big pharmaceutical companies, right? Because how much of a business are these drugs for these companies?
They are raking in trillions and trillions of dollars. And the reason why it's a good thing to bring that up is because we have seen an uptick, not only in the United Kingdom, but the United States and elsewhere across the world, because of the United Nations, this grab at social and emotional learning. Because after all, we haven't been educating the whole child, James, because if we had, we wouldn't have so many children in this social need, emotional needs. Well, you know, quite frankly, social and emotional needs are that of the parent to bring about and to nurture, not the school, not the government, and not big pharma. And so the social and emotional learning industry, by and large, by 2027, is expected to rake in, I believe it is, $30 trillion in profit off of the backs of not only over-medicating, but over-intervening with our children when and where they don't need it. Now, we're not talking just K through 12 education. We're talking about secondary education, college years, university years, whatever you want to call them. So you're talking about getting these kids diagnosed early, and we're talking about earlier than usual behavior signs show up. We want big pharma and big insurance want to get them early diagnosis, which means high stake assessments that they may not be ready for. Get them early, dope them up, dope them for life. And then you have a customer. You don't have a healed person. You don't have a person who can function as the way they were intended to function.
Yeah. And now let's talk about, because schools, I think the education system is a lot to do with this, isn't it? I mean, we kind of farm our kids out and we hand them over to the education system. And I, for a long time, have believed that, you know, the way that schools educate, which is basically putting 30, well, in the UK anyway, class sizes in public schools are about 30, put them all in a big line up against the teacher, and then they're rote taught to learn facts and to learn things. Now, that's, to me, works for some kids, but it didn't for me. I mean, I hated school. I used to sit there daydreaming, and I came out of school with no qualifications whatsoever, but I've gone on to do a lot with my life, you know? So it just goes to show that style of education. Talk to me about that, because I know from your article, you think that is part of the problem.
Well, it absolutely is, because as you just said, we have given the government a front seat at the table of who is raising my child and how my child is being raised. And that is really a concern, especially post-COVID, because you now have teachers who are not medical experts being part of an intervention to the point of, oh, well, Johnny and Susie are displaying these sorts of symptoms, so therefore I have to get them into some sort of mental health problem intervention because there's something wrong with them. Now, what we need to understand is that because this is a movement that has been in the works since 1975, the United Nations is definitely behind it, but you need to understand that the World Council of Gifted and Talented Children has a document in their history where you have people who are setting out saying, oh, well, we need to create a new type of human And the way we recreate this new type of human is that we go after the education system. So therefore, we don't teach them how to think, we teach them what to think. And depending on what sort of medication they're on or social service they're hooked into will largely dictate how they what they think.
Yeah, and this ties in. I mean, I frequently talk on this show about children, about sex education in schools, but also this new kind of celebration of I guess the only way you can describe it really is it is a mental health problem where people actually believe that kids can be born into the wrong body. And, you know, they're telling kids, little boys, that well, you know, you're a bit confused, which I think is a normal thing growing up, right? It was when I was growing up. But they're now telling them that if you're confused, then maybe it's because you're a girl. And they're also telling gay children, gay girls, gay boys, that maybe you're not gay. Maybe it's actually just you're the wrong sex. Is this adding to the problem? Is this part of the problem in schools, this confusion that we're teaching kids?
Well, absolutely. And again, you can look at the medications that are being used. You look at the fact that we're introducing hormones to children who were never supposed to have that type of hormone. You know, look at the upsurge in the rage that is going on, especially when girls are given too much testosterone. I mean, just look at some of the school shootings. By and large, the people who are doing this are people who are on heavy medications, who have been told, oh, well, you're this, you might be so confused. Well, yes, we go through confusion as we mature, but that's part of our natural abilities to be able to form critical thinking, which we do not teach anymore. We don't teach the components of how to think at the proper stage. We're trying to introduce this into early education as young as preschool. Well, honey, at preschool, you don't know your belly button from a hole in the ground. How are you going to be able to understand, okay, I need to critically think my way out of this problem? You can't do it because your brain is not developed that far. True critical thinking in classical education didn't happen until high school or secondary education, because that's when the components of your mind were at the stage of my hormones have somewhat calmed down because of puberty. I'm now at a stage where I can start to grapple with these things.
Yeah. Now, Lynn, I saw a fantastic post from Bill Maher on his show over the weekend. Wow. And I think, you know, it was a short segment he did on all of this. And he basically said, look, kids, without being, you know, derogatory, kids are morons, right? If you tell them a thing. Well, I mean, they believe in Father Christmas, right? So I think the point he was making is, look, if you tell kids a certain thing, they will believe it. They're susceptible. They believe these things. And that is why it's wrong. A lot of this stuff that we're teaching kids, particularly also about, you know, we're constantly talking about mental health. Are you okay? Have you got mental health problems? If you constantly do that to kids, then, you know, it's not surprising that so many of them then are turning around and thinking that they have got problems. Now, Lynn, what do you think the answer is? Because I've had people on this show over the past couple of weeks who've said, well, the only answer really, if you're worried about this as a parent, is to take your kids out of school. What do you think is the answer?
That is one answer, but you need to be aware enough that because of the massive overreach of the United Nations through the Sustainable Development Goals, number 4 is quality education. But what precedes it? Health care. The reason why you taking your child out is part of the solution doesn't divorce it from the healthcare aspect. And when you have, especially in the name of COVID, government agencies and government services that are now infiltrating your home with, well, you're not schooling in the way that we think that you need to school. Are you medicating in the way that we think that you should be medicating? That's the other wiki sticket that you've got to address. And a lot of people are not. They're just going, okay, I'm just going to pull Johnny and Susie out. great, fine, and wonderful. You solve half the problem. You haven't attacked the rest of it. So we have to look at the healthcare side of this, because I don't know about in the United Kingdom. I know you guys have socialized medicine. We're rapidly approaching that here. But even even with the social and emotional aspects of the big pharma and the big insurance, you go into the doctor's office now, and you, the parent, may not can go into the office with your child, your minor. They're being asked all sorts of invasive questions, not just about mental health, but gender as well. And as you pointed out, you don't know unless you've been told. And when you've been told enough times, this is what's so masterful about the government propaganda that we all are under, because we've been told for so long, oh, well, COVID did this to you, COVID did that to you, or, you know, your family did this to you, or your family did that to you. Well, it might be true, it might not, but not everyone needs to be in the same bucket.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're a better placed in the UK, actually, because we, I mean, we've just banned hormone puberty blockers, for example, in the UK. Okay. And also, you know, pharmaceutical companies are not allowed to advertise here. Kids don't have to have vaccines as well to go to school, which is something we see in the US as well. But listen, Lynn, it's an incredibly important topic. So please do continue writing about this. I think it's definitely one that we should all be, people should be learning a lot more about. Lynn Taylor, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming on the Freeman Report, Lynn.
Thank you.
Right, okay, that's it for this hour, but I'm going to be back in a second to do another hour with you, so don't go anywhere. Stay right put where you are, right here on TNT.